Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. Okay, let's do it again. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm opening the House Energy and Environment Committee on Tuesday, April 24th, 2015. Welcome. We are going to go ahead and get started with a public hearing on House Bill 2216. Beth, can you read the description of that bill?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2216 would authorize the Public Utility Commission to include in an electric company's rates the cost of electricity, including above market cost, if that electricity is part of a project that uses wind, has a total generating capacity of 30 megawatts or less, is located in federal waters of the state off the Outer Continental Shelf, and for which a request for a Outer Continental Shelf renewable energy lease was submitted on or before May 14th, 2013. It repeals the Act January 1, 2022.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And we have Senator Roblin and Kevin Bannister here to talk about this bill. Welcome.
Chair Vega Peterson and committee, it's really an honor for me to be here. I am Senator Arnie Roblin, House District 5, which includes portions of the coast from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and into the valley in Sheridan and Falls City. You have a bill in front of you which, in my opinion, and I think you'll hear from Kevin, needs some more work with a whole lot of people on the coast and with the electrical industry as well. And we are asking that this bill be sent to rules so that we can come up with a plan and a work group that over the next period of time will work together to come up with the legislation necessary. After having worked it with my fishing community, my other people on the coast, and the agencies that produce and provide power on the coast. So with that, I would encourage the committee send this to rules so that I can work with them. I plan personally in any way I can to help with that work group. I know that Representative Boone and Representative McEwen have also been interested in doing the things that we need to do. But I think we need more time to make this the viable project that we hope it can be to produce these devices for other places around the world, and that we have the test site and opportunity then for coastal jobs and develop that relationship with our coastal fishing fleet and the workforce that we have there to do this. So I look forward to the opportunity to work to put this task force together and work group.
Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Bannister. I'm a vice president with Principal Power. Thanks for the opportunity to say a few words about our project today. I also want to thank Senator Roblin for his words just now. For the record, the project that we're talking about is a project called a Windfloat Pacific. It's a floating offshore wind demonstration project that has received a significant amount of support from the U.S. Department of Energy. If we're successful in hitting our milestones, the project will be able to receive up to $50 million from the U.S. federal government. The intent is to demonstrate the potential of the technology, and we think that over time there's a tremendous opportunity for truly significant economic development opportunity for the state, really throughout the state, and certainly with a focus on the coasts. We think that some of our coastal facilities are incredibly well situated, both geographically and in terms of the infrastructure that is already in place or is planned, to really play a significant role in the deployment of an industry as it evolves over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, which is what we expect to see happen. So I would echo the request and recommendation from Senator Roblin that the bill be moved to the Rules Committee so that we have more time to work together and form a work group to ensure that we come up with something that can be broadly supported. Thank you.
Questions for this panel? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to echo the two people at the dais also and recommend this move forward to a work group in rules or out of rules. But I just want to impress upon people the importance of making sure that the time frame that is required by the Department of Energy in order to attain or retain this money that they're talking about, it would be a shame to lose that or jeopardize that in any way. And this also gives a chance for more people to come to the table and discuss this and hear about some of the potential opportunities that this project as a test will bring to our coastal economy. And that's what's really important, too. And finally, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the importance to the resilience component of it and the fact that when our transmission is down by the Cascadia event, that we will have nothing on the coast, and it'll be anywhere from 3 to 5 years before they start to rebuild. So I know that sounds terrible, and it might even be too low a time because there's going to be a horrible mess. And if we can bring power energy from the coast in on our side of things, we're going to be able to recover quite a bit sooner. So I support this 100%, and I expect all of you to vote yes.
Other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question I would have is that in hearing about what's been proposed and the potential costs, there seems to be a large gulf between what the cost of the power would be and what the utilities are able to, you know, spread out on their base users and so forth. So how does a work group get around the financials? Because at the end of the day, I think you still have a huge issue, a huge nexus there that has to be bridged. How will this work group get from point A, where they are now, to where I think you need to be, for the, so that the utilities and I think the PUC can show their support for this project?
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Well, I think we start from a place of recognizing that this is a demonstration project. So just by its nature, the costs are going to be high, especially relative to the market that we live in here in the Pacific Northwest. I think, you know, we've heard the message loud and clear that costs are a concern here. And I think that, you know, we want to have the time and make sure that we have the right people around the table to really dive into that question and see what kind of answers we can come up with.
I just like to say, too, I think we had a little meeting last night and talked to a number of people, fishermen and others, and I guess the thing that came loud and clear from some people that I knew was that there was a lot of money that had to be put into the development of wind on land and in particular parts of your group. And afterwards, once it got figured out, the first projects were expensive. After it got figured out, they have raised a lot of money for those parts of the state, and they've worked out ways in which it can work. It won't be the same model on the coast, but we know there are other places in the world, if we're the producer of, already have higher prices and need some of this power. And so the issue is to have those conversations with the industry and others to say, is this the kind of project that can be helpful over time for all of you? Because you first got to prove it. You know, you got to find out the science behind whether it will work out there, whether it will last out there, and so on, so that people will invest and buy it someplace else. That's when the price goes down. So I think that's the conversation we want to have as part of the group.
Yeah, Representative Reardon.
Well, more of a statement, probably. I think it's really not easy being a pioneer. You know, we still see the guys, you know, trudging across the mountains, and that's kind of what you're doing right now, is trying to trudge across, and you're pushing the oxen, and it's a very difficult row. And I really understand what it means. I worked at Tektronix, and we would actually developing new technologies. And we would be selling products that cost us more to make than what we could sell them for. So I get that part. It's just the challenge here is, and it's such a great positive potential benefit, and I really want to support it. So, but we got to figure out who's going to pay for it. Yep. You know, back in the Tektronix days, it was investors, yep. And we knew who those folks were, and eventually they made out pretty well. But it's not quite that same scenario here. So. And I really support the technology and what you're doing, and hope that we can find a path forward on this. And that's why I'm willing to continue to breathe life into this project. So,
Representative Whitener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, I mean, we have a lot of different bills coming at us like this. Actually, we have one with Representative Hulvey today, just dealing with storage and looking at water and hydro for that. My concern is when we're looking at this with all the different options that are out there, I know what the salt and sea does to mechanical equipment. So I'm sitting here thinking about this, and we're looking at 30 miles offshore. How are we going to withstand this when they're already a mechanical nightmare with all the moving parts that are in a wind turbine to begin with, and then you put them out there with the salt, sea air, and everything on top of it? You know, is this going to be us throwing a lot of money at something that's just doomed to be a failure from the beginning just because the natural environment that you run into with the salt water and the sea? So I don't know if there's any comments or if you have any that have survived on a small scale, because this is a little bigger. I would rather do something small just to prove that I have the mechanical technology to hold up.
Sure. So thank you for your question, Representative Winder. We've had a prototype operating offshore Portugal, actually, for the last 4 years, and conditions offshore Portugal are pretty similar to what they are here in terms of wave conditions. The winds are a little stronger, but with structures like this, it's the waves that really cause the greater challenges, and it's operated quite happily through 60-foot waves, actually very large conditions. And then you spoke about the turbine, rightfully so. But in Europe, the offshore wind industry has been successfully deployed since the 1990s. So for something like 25 years, they've had an industry that has grown. And today, there's several thousand megawatts deployed for offshore wind that are right in the midst of the conditions that you're describing, with salt fogs and things like that.
They tend to be on platforms as opposed to this new design, which is more apropos for a deeper. And I think so. The stuff on top is pretty similar. The other thing I would say is right now we're looking at 18, not 30 miles off. But from my perspective, if those can be serviced by people who are doing different jobs in the ocean, like fishing and other things, and they can get income to go out and check and do some stuff, a little training, or use their boats and be hired at times they're not fishing, I look at that as an opportunity for some of the people in my community to make a little extra money and do some things if we can prove that the technology is right. And the only way to prove it, answer all your questions, is to get something in the water. And this will be one or two buoys, so we're talking about a fairly small project, albeit expensive, because these are very large machines.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, of all the people up here, I think I understand the challenges that your district faces when it comes to attracting economic activity. And so I can sure understand why there's a lot of support for the bill. However, my question would be, what commitments does Oregon have to make so you can get your federal $50 million, and how expensive are those commitments, and when do those commitments have to be made?
Thank you, Representative Bence. That's a very thoughtful question. I appreciate it. I fear I will divulge too greatly, so if I start talking for too long, please throw the gavel.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
So I'm only interested in a couple of things.
Yeah.
One, how much does this state have to commit? How many dollars? How soon, in order for you to shore up your application to get this $50 million of federal money? That's what I'm interested in.
Right.
How much? How soon?
Right. So at present, we're not asking for anything from the state. The current bill, which I think we're recognizing today, needs further amendments. The current bill would ask the ratepayers of the state to make a commitment to the project, so there would be no impact on the taxpayer.
If I may, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Forgive me for confusing the issue. I meant to say, when I say the state, I mean the taxpayer or the ratepayer.
Okay.
I'm treating them exactly the same.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So I think under the construct of the financial assistance award that we received from the Department of Energy, their initial expectation was that we would have a PPA that would pay for the project basically by the end of July of this year. That time frame, from the time that we initially won this award, it was a competitive process that we won this award from the DOE a couple years ago. We suggested to them that there was a very aggressive time frame. They understand that. So what they have accepted is that if we're able to demonstrate that there is a will in the state, and I must confess there's some gray area here, if there's a will in the state to identify a path that would allow the project to get paid for, and the mechanism, it doesn't have to necessarily be prescribed. The most common mechanism for a project like this is a power purchase agreement. So this is why the bill, as it's currently drafted, prescribed a path that would result in us having a PPA by sometime next year. That's later than the DOE would like it to be. But we received some assurances that might be enough. So what we're trying to do is come up with something that gets us as close to a PPA as we can.
Follow-up.
Okay, so thank you for that, and the issue was how much. So I will, the much would be the amount in excess of avoided cost. That would be a good measure of how much the ratepayers are being asked to put up or commit to, whether it's a gray area or not.
Right.
What is that number?
So, again, in the bill as it's currently drafted, we have a 35 cents per 1,000 kilowatt hours consumed. That 1,000 kilowatt hours consumed was selected because it's a close representation of a residential ratepayer's monthly usage. That's not to suggest that other rate-paying classes like the commercial industrial ratepayers wouldn't have the same protection in the form of a rate impact cap. But that's how we came up with 35 cents per 1,000 kilowatt hours. And this was always intended to be the cap, so anything more than that and the contracts would not be approved. But I also want to recognize here today that we've heard the message that even at that rate, there are some concerns around the cost, which is part of the reason that we're encouraging the creation of a working group under the Rules Committee. So that we can keep looking at that to see if there are ways that we can reduce that further.
Okay. One final question.
Follow up.
And the avoided cost, so everyone can compare avoided cost to the 35 cents. But my understanding is 3 cents. Is that a correct thought? 3.5 cents is what the natural gas cost is now, and this is 35 cents. Is that a correct measure of the difference?
Not quite, because the 35 cents isn't a per kilowatt hour cost. It's or a per kilowatt hour price. It's the difference. It's the additional monies that a ratepayer might be paying over the course of their entire month's electrical usage. So if we were to talk about a per kilowatt hour cost, we're talking about something at probably in the mid 20 cents range. I would say I'm not the most qualified here to talk about what the avoided cost is, but that's probably in the range of 4 to 5 cents.
Thank you.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So something else I wanted to bring up that I forgot in my last little rant was the fact that the state has invested quite a bit of money into this sector already through the Oregon Innovation Council and some other grants and some other programs, et cetera. And we have been setting policy for the last 8 or 9 years moving toward this. We've changed our territorial sea plan to include ocean energy, and that was no small feat, 5 years, I think. And so we've made some decisions regarding policy, and as Kevin mentioned, these installations are being found all over the world, mostly Europe, I guess, and North Atlantic. And, you know, it makes sense as long as we're headed this direction to give this pilot project a chance. And also, one of the biggest things is we have an RPS to meet, and we're 20 years out, it's sold out right now, and we're going to have, I think, some real challenges finding renewable energy sources to meet our RPS. And so this is a good one. This will bring in a lot of energy. It's not just a little bit here and there. If it works and it gets built out, I think we'll see that we can meet our RPS with the other sources that we're finding. And there are new ones all the time. The geothermals come out, Klamath Falls, I think, is run by geothermal power now. So it's happening around the world, and I will make that invitation again. I keep every article about these issues, especially when they're about Oregon. So if you need any information, I'm not the only or the last draw, but I have a lot of information I can share. And there have been several articles lately in journals on this issue. So they're out there, and they're very competitive right now.
So, yeah, did you want to respond?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Representative Bentz, if I could just add a little bit of follow-up to my response to your question, I do want to highlight that the price that I mentioned there is not so far out of line from other renewable resources that have steeply declined in cost once given the chance to be deployed. So at something like a 25 cents per kilowatt hour, that it wasn't so long ago that solar was at that price. And it frankly wasn't so long ago that even onshore wind had that sort of price point. So, and of course, one of the main things that drives the cost on a per kilowatt hour of this project is its very small size and the fact that it's 18 miles from shore and 18 miles of cable. It's difficult to amortize the cost of the energy over with such a small amount of energy. Difficult to amortize the cost of the cable over such a small amount of energy. But recognizing that this is a demonstration far from reaching the economies of scale that do help those costs. That's some sort of additional information around the price.
Okay, thank you. So thank you both very much for all the time that you've put into this. I know that you spent a lot of hours this session on it, trying to get to a place where we could find a path forward. I think this is something that we could do here to have the demonstration project built so that we can see if this is a renewable energy source that we can grow here, as well as the potential of the manufacturing of these things. If we have that, if we gain the expertise on that, I think that's very exciting in terms of economic development for coastal communities. But the major factor is the price, the cost per ratepayers, and that's always been the biggest concern and really the biggest roadblock to moving forward with this. And so I'm happy to move this to rules to bring folks together to create a work group or a stakeholder group to talk about, are there other ways that we can find buyers for the energy that would be produced in this demonstration project that don't hit so hard on the ratepayer group that we're talking about here? Is there other, can we use some of the federal partners and federal allies that we have to look at other sources, customer sources for this? And I think it's a really exciting opportunity for Oregon, but it definitely needs more work to get to a place where we can move forward. But cognizant of the timeline that you're under and really the millions of dollars in investment for Oregon that this could lead to, we all want to move forward with this. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here who wanted to testify in this bill? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2216 and open a work session on House Bill 2216. We just had the description of the bill and understanding that this is to move to rules so that they can put together a work group.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 2216 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules.
Rep. Reardon moves House Bill 2216 without recommendation on passage to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Widener.
Madam Chair, I will be a no on this. I think we have better opportunities for using our ocean for power than what we're looking at here. There are programs that are out there. I mean, they just said in testimony that are working right now that have been going 4 years to actually start seeing what the cost will be on this, but it's a huge cost to the ratepayers in the state of Oregon. Just the electrical lines and all the money that would be coming in from the federal government and everything, I would think should be enough to pay for a pilot project, and it appears to be going way above and beyond that, and I will be a no vote because I think this is too much money for the type of project and what we're looking at doing.
Okay, thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I too am concerned about the cost, particularly over the long term. Today I'm going to be a courtesy yes to move the conversation forward and see if that cost can be brought down to something tolerable. But I didn't want this bill to move forward without expressing my concern about the cost.
Okay, thank you. Representative Benz.
Madam Chair, I truly understand the need for the southern coast, for that matter, the entire coast, to do something when it comes to economic development activity. I truly do understand that. I'm going to be a no despite that, and part of it has to do with other experiences with wind power that haven't been what I would call the most positive things. But that's not to say anything bad about this particular exercise. It's more that I know how this works, and I think the time frame is such that there's going to have to be a commitment made in haste. I don't care how highly qualified the work group is. When that time pressure is upon you, there's going to be a huge desire to try to make this happen for all the reasons we've heard, whether it's to try to grab that $60 million from the, or $50 from the federal government, or whether it's to try to help the South Coast, or you name it, all that we've heard it all. And nothing generally very good comes from that haste. We've learned that with other situations, whether it's the Betsy or these other things. Nothing good comes from it. And so I will be a no now because I won't have an opportunity later when it goes to rules.
Thank you. Further discussion? I would just like to say I take your point, Representative Bentz. The goal, I think, is to put together an amendment to this bill that identifies the right people to have at the table, the stakeholders to have at the table, so that we can and have that bill passed, so that we can have a longer discussion over the interim with all of those folks to find a solution to this. And so hopefully with that time, we'd be able to move forward in a way that addresses the issues that have been raised today. Okay. The clerk, why don't we have the clerk call the roll?
Representative Hurd.
No.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
No.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Mike Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Rules. I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2216 and open a work session on House Bill 2941. We had a public hearing on this on March 3rd, and we do have a dash 3 amendment on this one. So can you go over the amendment?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, the dash 3 amendment would require, this is the bill that deals with community solar gardens, would require the electric company to provide a portfolio of rate options to residential consumers that includes the option for electricity associated with specific renewable energy resources, including solar PV, if the commission makes certain findings. It also directs the PUC to evaluate programs to incentivize the development and use of solar PV energy systems and submit a report to the legislature that recommends the most effective, efficient, and equitable approaches to the programs. That report is due September 15th, 2016. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Chair Vega-Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-2 of 15.
Rep. Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-2-15. Is there any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to compliment the PUC for their good work on the Dash 3s and working with some of us. I think they'll provide some good data, some good information. It'll help this committee going forward to make some good decisions about incentives and so forth. So I appreciate their support.
That's good. And I appreciate your work on putting this together. I think this is going to provide some information that this committee and the legislature in general is looking for in terms of the effectiveness of some of the policies that we put in place during our sessions. Is there further discussion? Representative Holby.
Well, I see the Dash 3 as a good incremental step. It does not totally address the concept of community solar in the original bill, but I think it is a good direction to go, and will hopefully bring us to more discussions around community solar in the future.
Thank you. And I know that Senator Beyer is eagerly awaiting this bill on the Senate side to continue the work on this topic. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection to moving the amendment? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Chair Peterson, I move to adopt House Bill 2941 as amended to the floor of the DuPass recommendation.
Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 2941 as amended to the floor with a DuPass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Widener.
Appreciate the context to 2941. I think we need to look at doing communities that are actually have their own solar power that's independent off the grid that maintains just for that local community and everything and supportive of doing things like that. But 2941, I don't think, does what I actually would like to do, and I will be a no vote.
Okay, thank you. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Holden.
Aye.
Representative Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Megan Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes. Is there someone who would like to carry this bill? Rep Holby? We'll have Rep Holby carry this one. All right. You guys want to co-carry? All right.
Representative Johnson can carry it if he wants. I'd be happy with that. Thank you for your graciousness.
Wonderful. We'll have Representative Johnson
actually,
here.
Actually, it's the independent voice I can carry.
I think we'll stick. All right, excellent. I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2941 and open a work session on House Bill 3478, Plastic Beads. I believe we do have a Dash 6 amendment on this bill. Do you want to give us a little summary of what that does?
Madam Chair and members, there is a Dash 6 amendment. This is a bill that phases in a prohibition on the manufacture and sale of personal care products and over-the-counter drugs that contain synthetic plastic microbeads. The Dash 6 revises the definitions of personal care product and plastic. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, great.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated 4-16-15.
Rep. Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated 4-16-15. Is there any discussion?
I'd just like to commend Representative Peluso and her most excellent staff for the hard work they've done on this bill.
And you're not at all biased on that excellent staff?
No.
All right, any further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt House Bill 3478 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Johnson moves House Bill 3478 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Widener.
As one of the sponsors of this bill and a strong proponent of using pumice soap growing up with it because it really gets the dirt out of the cracks and everything, I think we need to bring more pumice back into our exfoliating soap systems, and I'm very supportive of getting rid of the plastic beads.
Excellent. Thank you.
Who could be against that?
Any further discussion?
We are a volcanic state.
Let's see, where are
we? It's hard to
know. Question my vote here. Now.
Okay. We'll have the clerk. Representative Peluso, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. You can't really top that. So why don't we have the clerk call the roll?
Representative Clark.
Aye.
Representative Holley.
Aye.
Representative
Benz. Aye.
Aye. Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Megan Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes. Representative Peluso, would you like to carry this bill?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Okay, wonderful.
We'd like a co-carrier.
Yeah. I would love it.
We'll have Representative Peluso carry the bill, and we will open, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3478. Very nice job. All right, let's go ahead and open a work session now on House Bill 2193, Energy Storage. We had a public hearing on this on St. Patrick's Day, and we do have a Dash 7 amendment for consideration. Can you talk a little bit about
the
amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the Energy Storage Bill. The Dash 7 amendment replaces the original measure. It defines a number of terms, including the energy storage system and electric company. If authorized by the PUC, it directs an electric company to procure on or before January 1, 2020, one or more qualifying energy storage systems with a capacity to store at least 5 megawatt hours of electricity. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 7 amendments dated 4-2015.
Representative Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 7 amendments dated 4-2015. Is there any discussion? No discussion? Any objection? All right, seeing none, the motion passes.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt House Bill 2193 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 2193 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Weiner.
If I may, I'd actually like to commend Representative Holvey on this and stuff for bringing this to us, and the fact that he left it as open as he did for hydro and different storage systems for power storage, and really support what he's trying to get after here, and not being keeping it narrow, but let's find real supplemental energy to back up our wind and solar that we do have out there. So I want to commend Representative Holvey for his work on this.
Yep, a lot of excellent work. Representative Holvey.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank the PUC especially and the Pacific Core and PGE for a lot of back and forth on trying to get this language to where everybody was in agreement, I think, with the Dash 7 amendment. And it maintains the prospect of really making some good investments in energy storage, which is really going to help us in our whole discussion around implementing and integrating renewables into the grid. So I'm really excited about this bill, and again, thanks to the stakeholders for helping me get it there.
Excellent. All right. So any further discussion? All right. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bruce.
Aye.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Weiner.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes. Representative Holvey, would you like to carry this bill?
Yeah, sure, I'll carry this.
All right, that sounds great. Okay, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2193 and open a work session on House Bill 2627. And this is the bill that Representative Leininger brought forward to look at the energy programs that are currently going on with the Oregon Department of Energy and having a look, have them look at them. There is a Dash 3 amendment, so Beth, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Madam Chair, members, the Dash 3 replaces the introduced version with the exception of the whereas statements. It requires the Department of Energy to conduct a study analyzing a variety of programs that support energy efficiency. There is a fiscal light statement and a request to add a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. There's no revenue impact.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-9 of 2015.
Representative Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 4-9-2015. Is there any discussion? Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt House Bill 2627 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Johnson moves House Bill 2627 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
No.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Weiger.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. All right, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2627. And and open a work session on House Bill 3076. This is the one that we heard just last week about groundwater and the impact with rental companies or rental properties. There is a Dash 2 amendment to this, which takes up some of the things that were in the original bill. So Beth, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Madam Chair, members, the Dash 2 would delete the requirement in the introduced version for a landlord to test wells, submit the results to the Oregon Health Authority, and provide the information to new tenants. The amendment also extends eligibility to receive grants to nonprofits, soil and water conservation districts, and OSU Extension.
and deletes additions to the seller disclosure statement. For the dash two, there is no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement.
Okay, thank you, Beth. I don't see Angela here, but I know, oh, she is here. Did you want to speak too? You don't, I know you've just done a lot of work, so I just wanted to thank you to the work that you did in putting this together to get something that we can have consensus on and be able to move forward with in addressing this issue. So I just wanted to thank you for that work. Is there, let's see, why don't you go ahead and make a motion?
Chair Vega-Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4-17 of 2015.
Representative Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 4-17-2015. Is there any discussion? Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Vega-Peterson, I move to adopt House Bill 3076 as amended to the floor. Okay. With a due pass recommendation, then it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Johnson moves House Bill 3076 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wanted to thank Angela and everyone for all their work on this bill. The portion that is of greatest value, I think, there's several, but the grants and loans piece is hugely valuable to small poverty-stricken areas where landlords are charging rent in the neighborhood of $200 to maybe $300 a month, and they don't have the money to repair the systems. And so having represented some of these folks in my law practice, I can assure you that if there was a problem discovered, most people wouldn't know what to do with it because they don't have the money. So this kind of program is absolutely essential, and I'm very happy to see it in this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Benz. Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, would like to thank the parties. This bill came at us kind of late in the process, and the landlords and tenants typically don't process bills like that. And so they came together. I think we've got about half a bite of the apple that actually of the problem that needs to get solved. But I'm happy that we're able to get this part done in this session, and I hope that the parties will come back next session with the rest of the bill that I hope is a more comprehensive look at all of the issues related to well testing and landlord-tenant.
Well, and thank you, Representative Helm, too, for all the work that you've done on this and digging into the issue to see make sure that we can keep moving forward with that. And I believe we have Glenn Baldwin. Is he in the room?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Vega-Peterson and members of the committee. Gwen Baldwin representing Multifamily Northwest. We are a trade association of the property owners and managers of over 150,000 units across the state of Oregon and Southwest Washington. And we very much appreciate the work, not only that Representative Helm and the sponsors did, but the work of the stakeholders and your flagging of Angela is well warranted. Landlord-tenant law is complex. It's challenging. It's one of the reasons why the Landlord-Tenant Coalition has been in operation for over 25 years. And the desire is to get it right. I think that everyone agrees with the underlying purpose of this bill for safe and clean how we integrate that with landlord-tenant law is the trick, and it just sometimes takes a bit more time, as Representative Helm said, and we're committed to giving it that time so that we can come back with something that works well for the 2016 session. So the commitment is that the coalition will absolutely take this issue up, and we appreciate your latitude in allowing us the opportunity to bring something really good back to you.
I think we look forward to seeing that in February.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think Gwen makes much more sense than Glenn, which I had written down here, so thank you. Okay. Is there further discussion from the committee? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega-Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent as amendment to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3076 and open a work session on House Bill 3091. This is Representative Bentz's bill on greenhouse gas evaluation. So there is a dash two amendment. Beth, could you describe that for us, please?
Madam Chair, members, the dash two amendment would replace the introduced version. It would establish the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Evaluation Framework Task Force consisting of 17 members, designate membership, and direct that the task force report to the legislature. There is both a fiscal and revenue light statement and a request that this bill be sent to Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you, Beth.
Chair Vega-Peterson, move to adopt the dash two amendments dated 4/20/2015.
Representative Johnson moves to adopt the dash two amendments dated 4/20/2015. Is there any discussion? Any further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Vega-Peterson, I move to adopt House Bill 3091 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Johnson moves House Bill 3091 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for entertaining this bill. The work that needs to be done here is significant, and the hope is that we get beyond subjectivity and to some set of metrics that we can use in applying to some of the many things we do as a group to reduce creation of CO2. And so the very, very, very challenging exercise, but one that I think is necessary. The trick is going to be to have the right people on the group so we don't get a whole bunch of spin in the outcome. And I'm sure that the DEQ is looking forward to assisting and finding the right folks to put on that group.
Great. Well, thank you so much for all your work and bringing this forward to have that discussion so we can look at it. Is there further discussion? All right. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Weiner.
I'm not quite as optimistic as Representative Bentz on finding the right people for the group and everything, so I will be casting a no vote just to throw some radar up to make sure we look closely and let them know that we will be watching to make sure they are looking at things objectively.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Representative Weiner. In that case, why don't we have the clerk call the roll?
Representative
Hurd. Aye.
Representative
Holt. Aye.
Representative Bentz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Weiner.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega-Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amendment to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3091. And we will open a work session on House Bill 3415. This was the bill on hydraulic fracturing, and the public hearing was in April 7th. There is a dash two amendment. Beth, can you go through that, please?
Madam Chair, members, the dash two would direct the Departments of Geology and Mineral Industries and Environmental Quality to conduct a review of the statutes and rules that are applicable to hydraulic fracturing and prepare a report, including recommendations for legislation or rulemaking. And submit that report to a legislative interim committee by September 15th, 2016. It also requires a person seeking authorization to conduct hydraulic fracturing to demonstrate to Doug Emmy that specified best practices will be employed. That portion of the bill is repealed January 1, 2025. There is a fiscal light statement, a request that the bill go to Ways and Means, and no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you, Beth.
Chair Vega-Peterson, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated 4/20/2015.
Representative Reardon moves to adopt the dash two amendments dated 4/20/2015. Is there any discussion? Representative Boone?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. The part about 2025, that went by me pretty fast. What was that again?
Okay. Representative Helm, do you want to go through, talk about the dash two amendments and answer that question?
I was going to talk a little bit about that. Thank you, Madam Chair. The dash two amendments came about after our discussion here in committee and in listening to Representative Bentz's comments about the initial idea. And so I went back and reworked the entire idea so that instead of imposing a moratorium outright, that we would ask the two departments to look at their rules, audit them, and give us feedback on whether they thought further rulemaking was necessary. And in the interim, between the time that they are able to get that done and the time of passage of this bill, if it were to pass, there would be best management practices imposed that are also part of the Dash 2 amendments, and they are at the end of the bill. Those include some statements about transparency, about what we're putting into the ground and what's coming out, wellhead and well casing integrity, and some other things related to water quality. So I kind of backed off from where I was, and I think in talking to both DEQ and Dogami as late as this morning, I got some clarity on where their existing oil and gas rules are now. They did adopt oil and gas revisions to their Division 10 rules in 2013. They're pretty good, but they are just oriented towards oil and gas exploration and supply. They intentionally did not look at fracking, and you can tell that because the term hydraulic fracking isn't in the definition section of their rules. That's a fine decision. So my point still is we ought to get a handle on what the best practices are out there, and we do have sources in Idaho, Colorado, and California to look at. Until Dogami can do that, we have these best management practices that put sideboards on the oil and gas drilling rules as they are to say, if you go after a fracking technique, you have to do it in these prescribed manners that ensure that we're getting good fracking and not bad fracking.
Representative.
I'm still not getting the 2025 part. What is that?
The 2025 part is just my intention to allow them that much time to go ahead and do their review. And these Dash 2s, I have to apologize. They need a little bit more work, which is why just a tiny bit, and which can get done at Ways and Means. That needs to be clarified. A couple other things need to be clarified as well.
Representative.
So it still sounds like a moratorium to me when I hear it that way. It sounds like they have until 2025 to present these new rules review or a review of their present rules. And so that's what I'm not getting here. So is it a moratorium in
no.
fact? So follow up. So someone could come forward and do something. I mean, it sounds to me like they have rules in place now that address this, and we don't frack in Oregon. So
they have rules that they can make work, but they don't have rules that specifically address fracking. And here's why. I know that there's some concern about, aren't these rules good enough? Here's where I come from. I deal with the Department of Land Conservation and Development's administrative rules all the time in my own work. I can't even claim to understand all of them, even though I work with them every day. And I certainly can't claim to understand whether DEQ's rules would work or Dogami's rules would work as effectively as we would want them if it were to come to fracking. And so that's the check back that I want. So I'm just not satisfied that we're all the way there yet. And the departments have not specifically looked at this. And so the reason that we have a longer time frame is to give them enough time to do this. If we're following the best management practices in the interim, I'm satisfied. Mm-hmm. And I think they're protective enough to make the rules work as they should.
And Representative Pelham, the 2025 date does not have a moratorium during that time on fracking. But what it does, it says that if you do it within, you have that time to draft the rules. Dogami has that time to draft the rules. And if any fracking takes place during that time, there's best management practices that they need to follow.
Correct.
Okay.
I couldn't really hear that very well. Could you, and that sounded really important. What was that last thing that you said correct to?
It's not a moratorium. It's that Dogami has a chance to audit its rules and Department of Environmental Quality. Audit their rules, engage in rulemaking if necessary, if they deem it necessary. And they have until 2025 to do that. In the interim, the best management practices would apply to any proposed fracking in the state.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question would be the best management practices would be used in North Dakota's. I would be in favor of that. Well, I'm just wondering what best management practices are and whose we're using for the best management practices.
Representative Widener, it's my understanding from talking with folks that are looking at fracking regulations regionally that Idaho, Colorado, and California have pretty good regulations right now, and that we could look that, to them as a balanced approach.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
The other reason I'm asking is because the only state that I know is doing a lot of fracking is North Dakota right now, so they would know any issues and things they've ran into. So that's why I was wondering if we would be looking to them for answers on a lot of these.
Representative Winder, my thought is that we would want to model off of states that are closer geographically to us. They're also doing a lot of fracking in Pennsylvania, for example, and they may have quite different situations there. Oklahoma's the same, and I'm not sure that we have the same geologic formations or the same challenges for fracking. Right or wrong, I'm assuming that the more further you go west, the more similar those states are to us.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. From my research, I think it's, appreciate the content or the intent behind the bill to environmental protection, and I think that's basically the heart of what we're talking about here. But I think it's clear that both DEQ and DOGAMI have quite broad statutorial authority to make and amend any rules should they need to. And I think they're in that process, and I do believe some of that conversation is being steered by from the federal level as well in terms of fracking rules and stuff. So I just don't see the need for this bill and for this legislation right now. The other thing I would add, though, if in fact it moves on from here, I think there's some issues regarding trade secrets and so forth that need to be addressed. That's a very important issue that needs to be brought up as we talk about substances and materials that you know the industry is using. We need to make sure that their best practices and so forth are protected. So for that, I'll not be supportive.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion? Okay. Are you ready? Oh, see, oh, sorry, I'm sorry, Representative. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Ben.
Ready for what?
No, sorry. Go ahead, Representative Benz.
I'll refresh my memory. We're still on the amendment, aren't we?
Just moving the amendment.
Thank you.
Okay, yes. Okay. Is there objection to moving the dash to amendment? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 3415 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 3091 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Oh, I'm so sorry. Hold on. I was looking at the wrong script. Let's do that again. Yeah. Representative Reardon moves House Bill 3415 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Now is there discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Helm for his work on this. I truly understand the concern and the need to make sure that this activity is done correctly. We do have rules in place that apply both to the permitting processes of the Environmental Quality Department Commission and also, of course, DOGAMI that apply to these situations. They're not as fresh as others. There's a brand new set federal government just issued, I think a week ago yesterday, that applied to federal lands, and I'm sure that there are approaches utilized in those rules that would be of interest to us here at the state level. The reason that I'm going to be a no vote on the bill is that I'm thinking that there are portions in the bill that don't really need to be there and could add additional complexity to moving forward with some of this activity, which is not necessary. What is necessary, I do believe, is that those two departments look at what the federal government just did and say, hey, is there something here we can do better? That's a really good idea, and I'm sure they will do that. So I just think the bill, although, I want to say I compliment Representative Helm on this work, because I do not see
DLCD in here, and that's good because we already have two layers of probably three layers, actually, because I think water resources at some point would be involved. So we already have three state agencies, and that's enough. And of course, at some level, DLCD will also be involved. They're already there, so there was no reason to add them in the bill. I'm very happy to see, at least on my reading here, that they're not. There's one other thing. I did speak with the folks who are engaged in at least leasing land for oil drilling in my part of the state, and they do have close to a quarter million acres now under lease. And so there will be oil drilling activity in Oregon because, of course, they're already producing in Idaho, a mere quarter of a mile away from our border. So I'm anticipating that there probably is oil on our side of that imaginary line. I would say that this is hugely positive for our state. This should be viewed as a eureka moment as opposed to an oh my God moment because there is 6% of all of that production will go to our schools, and it could be in the tens of millions of dollars if North Dakota is to be a gauge. I did, after our last hearing, go to Google, and I looked at what they're doing in California, and I had some great quotes from Governor Jerry Brown, who is a huge supporter of hydraulic fracturing, because, of course, they've been doing it for 50 years in California, and it pays huge amounts of dividends to the state of California, not to mention, in his words, reduces dramatically the amount of imports of oil and other things from overseas. So I'll simply say this is a happy moment for our state, and I just hope that this bill, should it go forward, does not interfere with what is an enormous opportunity for us.
Thank you. Further discussion? I would just also like to thank you, Representative Helm, for this work on the bill. I think the fact that there is no moratorium keeps open the possibility of having the hydraulic fracturing happen in our state, because we know the areas where we've identified, we saw the map at the last session, where it is. Those are areas where they would love to have additional economic development happen in those things. However, I do think that it's really important that we have specific rules in place that deal with this issue, because we know that there have been environmental concerns, environmental issues that have occurred elsewhere in the state or elsewhere in the country because of these mechanisms. And so I want to commend you for that work. Representative Polvey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I also commend Representative Helm for his work, and you know, and looking at the amendment, I think it has made a vast improvement to the bill. And though it may be true that there is a lot of rulemaking already in place for DOGAMI and DEQ, I think that this bill really highlights some issues we would like them to undertake and points out some directions that we would like them to go ahead and do some rulemaking on and prompts them to do this. So I think this legislation is actually a good idea and well-timed so that we do make sure it's done right. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be supporting the bill.
Thank you. Further discussion? All right. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
This is for the amendment?
No, we're on the bill now.
Bill, no.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Weiger.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
No.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Baker Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3415. And open a work session on House Bill 3225. This is on the issue of moving oil by train that we heard on February 9th. And we do have, we have no amendments on that bill.
Madam Chair?
Well, yes.
I would like to move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3225 that are on old.
So, Representative Widener moves the dash one amendments that are on OLIS.
I will get the date because my computer went to sleep on me.
Okay. 420. Okay.
420?
420.
That are dated 4/20/2015.
So Representative Widener moves the -1 amendment dated 4/20. Is there discussion? And I will say that the plan for this bill is to move it to rules without amendments so they can continue to the discussion that they're having there to try to find a solution to this oil by train problem. There has been a lot of discussion on the work group, but I know that there were some amendments that we wanted to have consideration that weren't ready. And in fairness to the discussion that's going on, I'd like to move it just the base bill.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The dash ones call for a coordinated task force that would involve multiple layers of stakeholders from transportation, ODOT, rail, fire marshal, the PUC, Marine Board, and it really is a holistic approach to trying to deal with hazardous cargoes. As we talk about not just rail, but roads and waterways and pipelines. And as someone who has a district that's bisected by rail and road and other and potentially marine as well, and I'm concerned about all modes of hazardous cargo, and I think we saw a good example of that with the truck accident that occurred down at Arlington over the weekend, where a truck flipped over and we had a diesel fire that closed down I-84 for the better part of a day. So it's not our concerns about hazardous cargo shouldn't be simply limited to rail, although that does tend to get the headlines and garner the most attention. But I think this is a great good faith effort. Lots of stakeholder involvement went into doing this. It's something that has been discussed in the work groups that we've Representative Smith Horner has had and so forth. So I would say that I think the other two options would be perhaps putting this amendment in. This becomes the bill, which could be amended later on and changed, or the problem I think you have with the base bill, which I'd be happy to discuss, is that's a drastically different piece of legislation that really doesn't have any relevance to rail. It starts talking about waterways and rebranding waterways and reclassifying those, and I think that is a very problematic piece of legislation to pass out of this committee to wherever for whatever purpose would be. So I think in the short term, the dash ones would be a very good step forward and a positive step forward, and I would support it.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay. And I would just say that I appreciate all the work that you've done on this and participating in the task force. There has been ongoing discussion about this, and I think there will continue to be. It's not intending to move to rules to have nothing happen. I think there's a lot of interest in seeing the amendments that are still in the works get done to finish up the conversation there and then move something out of rules. So if there's no further discussion, we'll have the clerk call the roll. And this is on moving the dash one amendments.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
No.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
No.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Helm?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon?
No.
Chair Baker Peterson?
No. The motion fails. All right.
Madam Chair, I would like to move the -3 amendments dated April 21st, 2015, to House Bill 3225.
Representative Widener moves the -3 amendments dated 4/21/2015 to House Bill 3225. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair, this is essentially having the fire marshal go through and just look at what we have on hand and look at what we actually should be doing. Do we have the response mechanisms in place to be able to handle any critical spill? And it actually helps us find out what's going on with our rail systems. And one of the things we haven't really looked at is what do we do with all of our transport systems, with all the trucks going across the roads and everything else, and look at a bigger picture of what we need to do with this before we take any actions or move forward. And one of the concerns I have even with the overlying bill is sending it the way it is right now, two rules, when they don't have the knowledge that we have in the background that we have dealing with these issues. And this would be something that I see would be a little better for rules to deal with and make a decision on and possibly clean up a little bit when they have it down there. So,
thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my district is looking for action, and they're looking for outcomes, and they're looking for it now. And this is, again, another step in the right direction. It would allow the fire marshal to coordinate a concerted effort to take into account what's available for materials, responses, and so forth, but to head up that process. And I think they're eminently qualified to do that. Again, they've I think been a part of our work groups. They've demonstrated their willingness and their, I think, their eagerness to participate in this process. So we have a piece of, or an amendment here that would enable that. Again, it's a good starting point. If something needs to be added to it going forward, that would be great, but at least we would have some kind of certainty about a process that I think would be comforting and reassuring to my constituents who are looking for action on this issue.
Okay, thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you. It is my understanding, and just from meeting over the years with your departed father, Tom, and you lately, that the railroads do have some plans in place, and they do have stashes or caches or whatever you want to call them. Maybe what we need to do is meet and make sure that everybody knows what's out there and where it is, so that when the emergency services respond to an incident, they will, you know, be able to jump on it, and maybe they need more. Maybe they need more equipment out there. I don't know, but it's my understanding that that's kind of the plan forward for this, anyways.
It is.
Okay, thanks,
Representative
Whitener. Madam Chair, and just want to respond to Representative Boone, because that's essentially what the Dash 3 does. It lets the fire marshal find out what they have on hand, what the railroads, and coordinate all of this effort and put forward the best practices for this. I think we've handled all the incidents that have happened across the state. We've done a very good job of it. Our first responders have been excellent. The railroads have been excellent. Everybody's done a great job. And this is something that just kind of coordinates the efforts of everybody together and allows the fire marshal to be the head of everything, to know what's going on. So,
and I think that I
encourage Representative Boone's support of the Dash 3 amendments.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that that is the direction that we're going with the amendment that's still being drafted and the discussions. I understand even with the Dash 3 amendment, there's some concerns about the about how the amendment is drafted, and there would be even additional work. And I'm all for that work going forward in the Rules Committee. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have concerns with the Dash 3. I think it's, you know, an okay amendment, but I think it falls short of really encompassing all the conversations that need to happen around this subject matter. I think the underlying base bill actually provides a pathway for better action and involvement of stakeholders and the Department of Environmental Quality, as well as the fire chiefs, and talks about the training necessary, as we heard in testimonies, you know, the inability of our emergency responders to deal with, you know, a spill of the magnitude that we would have with an oil train. I think that this subject needs some more discussion, and I think we should just move the underlying bill without amendments going forward at this point.
Thank you, Representative Holby. Further discussion? Okay. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
No.
Representative
Benson.
Aye.
Representative Boone. Representative
Weiner. Yes.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
No. Sorry.
We'll take the first one.
I thought we were.
Vice Chair Jones.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
No.
Chair Baker Peterson.
The motion fails. Oh, sorry. No, it doesn't yet. No. Okay, now it fails. So.
Chair. I hate to say it, but I'm all out of amendments.
All right.
In that case, Chair Rebecca Peterson, I move House Bill 3225 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Rudin moves House Bill 3225 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, this has been a very frustrating process. I think there's been a lot of good faith effort to try to get to consensus here. There's been some good work group progress, but, you know, for whatever reason, we're still waiting for something that we have no idea what it looks like. This is just, I think, it's been a frustrating process for me, for my district. Again, passing this base bill, it has nothing to do with what ultimately I think it will attempt to be, is, I think, just, again, not a good practice. We have the ability to do something today that's knowable and workable, but I'm really frustrated with where this is, and I just don't think it's great work by this committee.
Okay. Representative Wagner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to concur with Representative Johnson on this. I mean, we have a February session where this bill could take work, and a lot of the stuff could be worked out and brought back to this committee where it belongs, not sent to a rules committee who doesn't deal with this policy day in and day out. We had two amendments that we could have sent to rules that would have been better than what this base bill is, and now we're going to rely on another committee to deal with policy that should be done in this policy committee, not done in a rules committee where basically negotiations and brokering and all kinds of other stuff will happen with these, and you have no idea what's going to come out of the committee. And I would like to know what we're doing with this. This is an important issue for the state of Oregon, for the citizens of Oregon, and for the health and safety of Oregon. And it should not be done in rules. It should be done in this policy committee. I would rather us not move any bill out of this committee and wait till February, where we have time to vet this and come back with a finished and complete bill, and we pass it out of here to the floor and not send it to a different committee. So I will be a no.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you. I agree with a lot of what Representative Wagner just said, and I'm very nervous about the fact of moving this bill as written with the navigable waterways in it, and that taking on a huge leap of faith in the drafter or the sponsor's comments to me on the floor today. So I will trust that that will be out, and I will trust everything I was told will come forward. So I'm going to be a very reluctant okay on this.
Thank you, Representative Boone. Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
No.
Representative Volpe.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
No.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent to the Committee on Rules. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3225 and open a work session on House Bill 3470. This is one of the bills that we heard on the day when we had the carbon hearing, having to do with greenhouse gas emission limits, and there is a Dash one amendment on this bill. Can you tell us a little bit about that amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Dash one amendment would add direction to the Environmental Quality Commission to collaborate with the Department of Environmental Quality to adjust regulatory mechanisms to compensate for any failure to meet the greenhouse gas limits that are called for in the bill, and directs that the EQC rules on registration and reporting require source emissions to apply full accounting principles throughout their life cycle. There is a fiscal light statement and a request that the bill go to the Joint Committee on Ways and No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Rules. I'm sorry. There is a fiscal light and a request that the bill go to rules.
Okay. Thank you, Pat.
Chair Rebecca Peterson, I moved it off to Dash 1 amendments dated 4-8-2015.
Representative Rudin moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 4-8-2015. Is there any discussions on moving the amendments? Is there further discussion? Is there any objection to moving the Dash 1 amendment? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 3470 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Rudin moves House Bill 3470 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will reluctantly help move this out today, too, because I have some serious concerns about it. I think we're moving before we have any information on this. This is a big leap of faith. Next week, we're going to hear from the government of Quebec and California on their carbon and climate issues, from the Minister of Energy from Quebec and their lead person from California. who will be able to give us their 4 years of experience in this sector, and invite everybody to come and listen, because I think it'll be a good and instructive meeting. I think that we can learn from others' experiences and hope that we do, and I worry about just putting an arbitrary dates out there and doing arbitrary levels of carbon emissions on that. For one thing, Oregon is very, very low on the carbon emission scale, and we make a very small, less than 1% impact on from the United States version. But where we can really make an impact is in the global scale, and we could be doing a lot of things that would help at that level. And I'm hoping that when this does go to rules, that this discussion after we're hearing from Canada on it, which is our closest neighbor, but we can consider what's been happening around the world as well. So we need to really get a bigger picture on this before we start making these arbitrary limits.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I don't know, we might want to reclassify that rules as the Rules/Environment Committee, because they seemingly are going to be considering do the heavy lifting for us, and I'm not quite sure why we don't want to do that here. But we did have a hearing, if you recall, that there were three bills opened. I don't recall the specifics of this bill being laid out in front of this committee in any great detail. Again, we had multiple proponents, obviously, who were here, and I think we gave all the 4 minutes to folks who might indicate some concerns. So I don't feel like we've done our work here as a policy committee at all. So to forward it to another committee and assume that they're going to give it a better day in court than what we did here, I think, is optimistic. So I'll definitely be a no.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be supporting moving this bill forward. I think this bill lays out some framework with plenty of flexibility in it. And although I would like to continue working on this bill, I think, like many legislators, I will do that and have the ability to do that no matter what committee this bill goes to. I don't think this particular committee necessarily has all the knowledge on any given subject matter, and the whole legislature considers these as they go through the process, and we all will have an opportunity to vote and debate issues on any bill that comes before to the floor for a vote. So I'm actually excited that this bill will continue to move forward. We'll continue to have discussion in another committee. I think it's good that it has several committees looking at it, and look forward to being able to look at it again in whatever fashion it comes out, and hopefully makes it to the Senate and will be continued to be worked over there. So I think this oversight and looking at this bill is not over for this particular committee member just because it's going to another committee. So I think this bill has some great elements, and if we really want to take climate change seriously, and I think this bill provides us a great step. I appreciated the hearing we had with the folks from California and some of the other people that were here to testify on this bill. So I'm fully supportive. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Rudin.
I'm supportive. I'm going to give it a positive vote coming out of the committee, but I'm not quite as enthusiastic as some and a little bit concerned about the bill, but we'll keep an eye on it going forward. We do have another opportunity to vote on it down the road, so cautiously optimistic on this one.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Widener.
Can we hear from PGE possibly on this, or Pacific Corps, just to have a couple questions, because we did get very little time with them. I would like to talk to them if I could, or somebody.
We are under a work session right now, so we're going to be under a motion to
probe questions or anything. Well, then I'll just make my comments then. Just like with the low fuel carbon standards and everything, you know, to me, when we're looking at carbon credits, and a lot of this is what we're doing is taken from people who don't have a lot, and we're giving it to people who do have a lot. It's mm-hmm. Wall Street that makes money off of this, is the way I see it. I mean, when we were doing the low carbon fuel standards, the carbon credits there basically are going to people who are doing well and making big financial decisions and receiving that money. When we're looking at carbon credits here, we're going to be taken away from essentially looking at ratepayers who are fueling and putting money into the pockets of bankers on Wall Street. And I'm not supportive of that. And just like the amendments and stuff that we made to the low carbon fuel standards in the minority report, how we address that to where we actually could have made a big difference in our society with coming up with zero emissions engines and things like that and supporting our education system. We chose not to do that. We chose to support millionaires, billionaires, the Tom Steyers of the world. We're also supporting the T. Boone Pickens of the world that are getting rid of oil earnings and going and buying natural gas. Why? Because they get all these carbon credits. And this is the kind of stuff that we are doing in this committee that's wrong. Now we're going to send it to rules and let them do it. I will be a very, very adamant no, as you can tell, just by my passion in speaking right now. So that's how I truly feel. And I don't think we should be moving this legislation out of this committee and giving it to rules. Thank you.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate you having the hearing that we had the other day with the three different options. The way that I come at this is these are huge transformational ideas, and they need airtime to develop for us to determine whether we want to go with one or not. And I think the public is strongly behind us doing more about carbon and carbon sequestration. If we don't engage in some way in these discussions, we make no progress in a direction that I see the public strongly wants us to move. We've run out of time as a committee to adequately look at this option. We ran out of time to look at the cap and dividend option, which is another option that is worthy of some scrutiny. I'm all in favor of us moving this to rules where these ideas get some additional airtime and a little bit of leg up as we move into subsequent sessions. Okay. So thank you for holding the hearings, and I'll be a yes.
Thank you, Representative Helm. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I simply put, I don't know hardly anything about this bill. I don't feel it's been properly vetted in this committee. I would never give my stamp of approval for something that has had this little time to actually be focused on, especially when you look at the enormity of the decision we're making. I grow weary of certain members of the legislature speaking as if the whole state is their population. My population that I represent is not enthusiastic about these carbon bills. I come from very poor communities, and I'm just concerned that it's going to have a huge impact potentially on our communities if we don't watch out how these may impact our economy. If we, I've said it on the floor when we passed Senate Bill, what was the number of it? Forget, 341, whatever it is. Too many bills in my head. That you have to have a strong economy to invest in R&D to actually share with the rest of the world on how to have better economies that don't pollute the air. And if we just completely put our hand over the oxygen that is our economy and shut it off, we won't have that investment. So, again, not proper vetting. Won't get my stamp of approval.
Representative Benz.
Madam Chair, and I think pretty safe to say everybody is concerned about these issues. This is a multi-billion dollar bill. It's a astounding set of requirements and restrictions and mandates that is really, I gave up adding them up over the weekend in an effort to try to figure out how to appropriately address this thing. I think that if this illustrates better than anything the failure perhaps of this legislature to appropriately approach this problem. And given when we see something like this, what it suggests is that we need to do something. We're not quite sure what, so this is what we have. And it's not quite ready, but we need to show that we're doing something. It's not, but this is a great big deal. This is in the billions. And so if we're going to send a signal to the people of Oregon that we are serious and that we actually understand when we're dealing with these issues how dangerous it is to mess around in our economy and to send these signals that we're going to impose these types of restrictions we need to be much more careful than what we're about to do today. This is not the way to prove to people that we know what we're doing. This is not. And so, sure, we're concerned, but my goodness, let's approach this in a way that sends a signal that we're learning from all those others that are trying to approach this in the proper way. This does not do that. I'll be a no.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Winder.
One final thing. I mean, these are bills that were sent into rules are getting very little airtime here. And rules, things go through very, very quickly, just bam, bam, bam. And when we're doing big policy decisions like this, we should not be sending them to rules where they're not getting a full vetting like they would here, especially with something like this. This is going to be 100 times of what Cover Oregon was. Cover Oregon started at $56 million and ended up over $300 million, and the taxpayers got nothing for it. And this is going to be much bigger than that. So.
Further discussion. So I appreciate all the comments and everybody weighing in on this one. This is a big bill. This is a big issue, though. It's an issue for our state. It's an issue for our country, and it's an issue for it's a global problem. We've had discussions earlier in this committee where arguments were raised that we weren't doing big enough steps. We weren't doing big enough things. This is a step to doing this. This is a step to approaching an issue that's already having impact on our state in terms of increased fire, impacts on the shellfish industry, on the agricultural industry, that we're seeing the effects. I think it's worth continuing the conversation in rules to see where we can go further with this because this is an important issue, and we are going to be hearing from other folks on what they're doing, and bringing that into the conversation I think is very important. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
No.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Winder.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
No.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Megan Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent as amendment to the Committee on Rules. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3470. And seeing nothing further, close the hearing for the House Energy and Environment Committee. The House Energy and Environment Committee.